Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody with us. And I wanted to start with, should I start with my book review? I'm not going to really do a book review. I'm just going to mention that I've completed, I'll do that later. First, let's go to this headline from the Atlantic Monthly. Are you familiar with the Atlantic Monthly, he asked, is extremely attractive. Audio engineer, you're not familiar with the Atlantic Monthly? It's a left-wing communist propaganda rag.
Oh, yeah, I read that. I subscribe.
It's mostly about entertainment and culture and mostly about living in New York City, from what I understand. Anyway, I haven't subscribed, not too familiar, but there was an article that came across my Yahoo feed, and the headline says, How to Find Your Faith. How to find your faith, and then you click it, and it links to an article from theatlantic.com, which is the Atlantic Monthly, which is a communist propaganda rag for liberal women who live in New York City. And so I just a note to everyone out there, if you're trying to find your faith, well, that right there is probably a mistake. Just thinking that you need to find your faith, you're already off on the wrong track, and the Atlantic Monthly, the editors at the Atlantic Monthly want to help you along that track. So if you want to find faith, then don't go to the Atlantic Monthly, because they're not going to help. And so I wasn't able to look at the whole article because of a paywall, and so I didn't pay for advice from Arthur C. Brooks at the Atlantic Monthly on how to find my faith. Because I had a feeling Arthur might be telling me how to find his faith or someone else's faith and dressing it up as if it was my faith to make me feel better about myself. And isn't that what it's really all about if you subscribe to the Atlantic Monthly? But the article did say that the portion of the article that was not behind the paywall said the percentage of Americans who profess no religion, as opposed to even having one that they rarely or never practice, has risen from, in the early 1970s, about 5% of Americans espoused no religion, and now that is about 30%. So just in the course of my short lifetime, a third of Americans have eschewed all religious belief at all, at least having anything at all to do with anything to do with Jesus Christ or the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the true and living God. Now, they all have a religion. Everybody has a religion. They just don't admit it. Or they're afraid to even suggest that they might have a religion, because then you might start talking to them about Jesus Christ, and that's the last thing they want to hear. So in America, from 5% nuns back in 1970. Think about it. Now, about two-thirds of Americans have participated in the murder of another human being. About two-thirds of Americans of childbearing age have participated in the murder of another human being. And that means that about a third of us are now delusional enough to pretend that there is no God. So at least to pretend that in public, while in private they think something completely different. And we might get into that. We might not. We'll see how it goes with the show. I just finished two volumes, Flight from the Absolute. And have I not written down the author's name? That's embarrassing. I told him, yeah, hey, I'll plug your book. I thought it was good. And now I didn't even write his name down. Well, I'll put a link. I will put a link in the blog if you want to check out these two books. He wrote me that his main point of writing these two volumes called Flight from the Absolute, he's a French speaker. He says, this is the dominant worldview in this generation, postmodernism. He says, in contrast to Enlightenment ideologies such as Nazism and communism, the postmodern elites that rule us are loath to have their creeds and dogmas out in the open where ordinary people that they despise, like you and me, could critique them or compare them to our own belief system. And postmodernism is the religion that preaches the worship of emptiness, absence, self. It's almost as if it encourages you to worship yourself until you decide to commit suicide. That's pretty dark and bleak, but that's postmodernism, and it does rule the culture as the dominant religious belief of people who pretend to know about such things. And so I'll link to the both volumes. I highly recommend. It's a college level course on sociology, theology, religion, philosophy. Really good stuff. So check it out, and maybe by the end of the show, the author's name will strike me because I forgot to write it down. But that's okay. You can click the link and check it out. Now, I thanked my crack audience last week for cluing me into the 1864 Arizona abortion regulation. Well, this past week, Governor Katie down in Arizona, she signed a repeal of the abortion regulation. That repeal having been approved by the Republican legislature in the state of Arizona. And Governor Katie, as she signed this repeal of a law that ostensibly would mean that you could kill fewer babies, at least it would imply that you could murder fewer babies and still be in compliance with the law. That was the implication. Far too few for Katie. And Katie said she was signing the repeal to protect our reproductive freedoms, quote unquote, quote, to protect our reproductive freedoms, unquote. So that's Governor Katie in Arizona. And does anyone else pick up on the dark Orwellian character of those words? So to use the word reproductive to describe an activity that stops reproduction, she calls that reproductive freedom. So she's saying the opposite of what she means, and everyone acts as if that's okay. Except us here at the Weekly Worldview, that's not okay. You can't say the opposite of what you mean and expect us not to call you out on that. Governor Katie and the Republicans in the Arizona legislature, they're not all about reproductive freedom. They're about stopping reproduction, especially if it's embarrassing or inconvenient to them or one of their family members. They want to have the option to kill an inconvenient, unloved, or unwanted child. And so that's what they've got in Arizona. And they've had it there since before the Civil War, we found out last week. So as of now, the Arizona state law will revert to a 15-week abortion limitation that was signed into law by some other guy in 2022, some guy I never heard of, calls himself a Republican, calls himself pro-life, signed you cannot kill a baby after it's 15 weeks old unless this and that and this and the other and that and this and that and this and that. So that's where that is. Meanwhile, down in Florida, you know, Ron DeSantis has signed a six-week abortion limitation with exceptions for rape, incest, human trafficking, life of the mother, and to avert a serious risk of imminent, substantial, and irreversible physical impairment of a major bodily function, unquote. So can you tell Ron DeSantis is a lawyer? He helped write that. So that is his legislation by which he can gallivant around the state claiming to be pro-life, claiming he protects all babies after 6 weeks except all the ones that can be killed in accordance with his rules. His Florida health regulators, the AHCA, the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration, the fact that you have that means communists have taken over. We have an agency for healthcare administration? Okay. I thought we used to just call that a doctor, and it wasn't an agency, it was just that the guy, the doctor. But now we have an agency that works for the lawyer who's in charge of all of the communist bureaucracies that rule Florida. in every state in the union. Regulators down in Florida focused on medical conditions that can present an immediate danger to the health, safety, and welfare of women and unborn children. But you know what they don't say? That these are the cases where the unborn children can be killed. That's what they wrote. So yeah, they're concerned about the unborn children. Uh-huh. So they issued rules on how and when babies can be killed in compliance with the pro-life law. The rules also require abortion clinics to submit monthly reports or face a fine. Possibly. Possible fine. Uh-huh. A fine if they don't murder the babies according to the letter of the law, it's possible they could face a fine. Yeah, that's right. When it comes to abortion, that's they just pay it. They'll just pay it. All right. Now, how is it that we've fallen to the place where even the pro-lifers are advocating murdering millions and millions of innocent people? How has that happened? Okay, well, it's a long story. It goes back a long ways. But let's just touch base with the United Methodists. 1984. I mentioned Orwell, unironically. 1984, the United Methodist Church voted on allowing homosexuals to be clergy in their church. And they also voted on same-sex marriage. This is 1984, back before it was even cool. The United Methodists were voting on it. And here's the thing. In 1984, when a church votes on such things as allowing sex perverts to preach from the pulpit and to marry people off right there in the church, when a church votes on such things, you know it's just a matter of time until they do those things. And that's why, apparently just this past week, the United Methodist Church overturned its 40-year ban on gay clergy. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I thought the United Methodists went gay like 1990. I mean, there's a United Methodist Church in Denver that's so gay that I don't even have a punchline for it. It's that gay. And it's been that gay ever since I can remember there was gays. So I didn't know they still had a ban. But apparently, at least some of them or some portion of them or whatever portion had been struck by lightning and cast into eternal damnation still had a ban on some sort of gay clergy. Well, they overturned that last week. According to the website where I got this story, which is called endtimeheadlines.org, that deserves a endtimeheadlines.org. They say the church has long been divided into factions over its stance on homosexuality and gay clergy. And I'm thinking, really? I didn't know that. I didn't know that there were any United Methodists who weren't full on like investors in gay bars and everything else. I mean, they own stock in Disney, take their kids to Disney, all of that. I thought they went full on gay in the 90s. But apparently that's not the case. The church had maintained a ban on clergy who were homosexual since 1984. And later added a clause saying that they couldn't perform same-sex unions, and now all that's been overturned. So, like, we didn't see that coming, right? So that's from the Queering of America file, where the homosexualists have conquered the United Methodist Church. Whatever last rear action was happening there in the United Methodist Church, it has all collapsed, and now... So we've got homosexuals preaching from the pulpit, marrying off queers right there in the church in front of God and everybody. We've got lawyers in Florida calling themselves conservative Republican pro-lifers writing rules on how to butcher children in compliance with the law. We've got Republican pro-lifers in Arizona repealing anything that might restrict the killing of any innocent child. And we've got the flight from the absolute and the rule and the fruit of the rule of the postmoderns. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I was waiting, but you can only wait so long on... Wait. No? I thought any minute we were going to get some drums. Any second. Just tease. Where are the drums? Please, guys, help us out. There we go. All right. Now, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us. You know, what's funny, though, is that in modern parlance, Neil Peart would be considered a conservative, and all three of those guys in the band were married to girls, had kids and stuff like that. So the book is Flight from the Absolute, Cynical Observations on the Postmodern West, Volume 1 and 2 by Paul Gosselin. Highly recommend it. Check it out. It'll confirm a lot of things that you've already suspected, but it will also give you some context, some historical and philosophical context for the insanity that we witness every day and that we comment upon here at the Weekly Worldview. And so with the postmodern West collapsing as it is into murderous, suicidal degeneracy, we have over in Germany, in Hamburg, 1,000 Muslims rallied last week against the freedom of the press. And they called for an Islamic caliphate in Germany. Oddly enough, the Islamists gathered in the district of St. George, which is known as the gay neighborhood in Hamburg. And they marched for an Islamic caliphate through the gay neighborhood, which is just kind of instructive. Now, they claim they were demonstrating against what they perceive as a media conspiracy to portray all Muslims as radical Islamists. And to show that they weren't radicals, they marched through the gay neighborhood, gathering marchers along the way, perhaps, in order to... Yeah. So there was a survey after the march for the caliphate through the Tenderloin there in Hamburg. A poll of Muslims, around 15-year-old ninth graders, found that nearly half believe that an Islamic theocracy is the best possible government for Germany. Two-thirds said the rules of the Quran are more important than the laws of Germany. And so all the Germans are just shocked that anyone believes in anything, because they've not believed in anything except their own appetites and lusts for so long that they're shocked anyone believes in anything, and so they're scared, and as well they should be. So, and by the way, the Muslims marching through the gay quarter there in Hamburg is instructive that the Muslims and the queers are all communists. They're all communists. And so the Muslims will happily align themselves with the queers and utilize them for whatever benefit they can until eventually they will turn upon one another. After they've destroyed Christianity and Western civilization, they'll turn on each other. And of course, at least at the moment, the queers would be outnumbered by the Muslims. And if things go, well, the way things go with queers and Muslims, the queers would always be outnumbered by the Muslims. And then it'll be like, like the Russian front or after the rapture. Yeah, this is from the after the rapture file. This is what it'll be like after the rapture, when Christianity is gone and all of the deviant, perverted, communist, murderous, suicidal murderers turn on one another. And it'll probably start right there in the Tenderloin in Hamburg, or whatever they call that district. They call it what did they call that district? The St. George district is the gay neighborhood. Why is the gay neighborhood called St. George? Or why were the homosexuals? Why did they take over a neighborhood in Hamburg named after a saint? That's instructive of the weakness of the fundamentally flawed Reformed church, and I don't want to get into theology, but Reformed theology is fundamentally flawed, and it's been a disaster. They did get people reading their Bibles. They broke away from the Catholic Church. They had some good ideas right there at the beginning, but then it got really embarrassing really fast. So, in fact, that brings us to our weak religion file, where we find that the TV series The Chosen is headed for Disney Plus. The producers of The Chosen have made a deal to stream their product on Disney Plus, along with all the filth and pornography and ungodly lessons that they teach the children. They're going to put a story about the life and times of Jesus Christ on there. WorldNet Daily reports that this deal comes as a surprise to some viewers, since Disney's platform is, well, full of all the perverted, demented, sick, communist propaganda and ungodliness. How is it that the producers of The Chosen could make a deal? Well, Dallas Jenkins, the creator, he's the fake Christian theological lightweight behind The Chosen. He says that, well, our agreement with Disney is not exactly a partnership. Okay, well, why did you even mention that word? Nobody thought it was a partnership, for crying out loud. But he says that his show is going to get a new audience, another new audience with the Disney streaming on. I'm not so sure that's true. I mean, really? What's the new audience? I don't know. How much daylight is there between Disney and the modern church? Church is in quotation marks, by the way. You know, the modern church who buys Disney and watches Disney and streams, disubscribes, takes their kids to Disney, all of that. I mean, is it really a new audience? I don't know. Anyway, The Chosen, I watched a few of them early on. And, I don't want to offend anyone, or I certainly don't want to upset anyone, but in my opinion, The Chosen is for people too shallow and lazy to read the book. And it's just another popular vehicle designed to hide the gospel in plain sight. And here's the thing about The Chosen. So people who are familiar with the gospel, people who are believers, people who are actually Christians, they might not even recognize that The Chosen doesn't preach the gospel. The Chosen hides the gospel. They might not realize that because they think the gospel is obvious because they already know it. But the Chosen does not preach the gospel. It does everything but. It encourages people to be a fan of Jesus. And being a fan of Jesus is not going to save you. So I'm not a fan of The Chosen, and less so of Disney. And so the fact that they've now made a deal to stream on Disney, it confirms my initial suspicion that this is just another fake, phony, fake entertainment. Yuck, that's all. All right, and I haven't watched enough of The Chosen to make any kind of theological, but let me tell you what I think The Chosen is. Just based on the little bit I watched and what I've heard, it's entertaining people with interesting facts about the life and acts of Jesus Christ without preaching the gospel, that you're a sinner, you're going to go to hell, Jesus is going to return with hellfire and damnation, and the only way to be saved from it is to believe his message that he died for your sins and to trust him for eternal life. That message is not preached or taught or even implied in my estimation on that show. So anyway, that's strike two for The Chosen. I haven't struck them out yet. But the Disney deal is strike two. All right. Now, speaking of all that, we go to the fake religion file where we check in with Russell Brand. Russell Brand, I remember when Russell Brand was just a comedian, and I thought he was witty. And he has a significant vocabulary. So he's an intelligent person, and he's got the English accent, so he automatically sounds smart, of course. Russell Brand posted up on social media a picture of himself hugging his dog with the word blessed after he got baptized last, was it last Saturday or Sunday? I'm going to assume it was on a Sunday since Russell Brand is following the celebrity Christian formula. Get baptized, post on social media, and say Jesus a lot. And then all the Christians will send you emails, and or what do they do? They don't send emails anymore. They'll post comments telling you how happy they are for you that you got baptized, demonstrating that you don't understand the gospel, right? So going out and getting baptized and taking a picture and posting it to the world, that means you don't understand the gospel. Christians should be sending him a message saying, Russell, please call us. You need help. You've gone astray, my friend. You don't understand the gospel. Anyway, he had been posting for a few months now that he is exploring Christianity, and he finally went and got baptized. And his baptism garnered 28,000 likes, for whatever that's worth. You know what that's worth? It's worth about as much as the dunk in the water. Russ, please give us a call. We can help you out, Russ. Anyway, in his announcement of his baptism and how wonderful it made him feel, Brand also connected his spiritual insights with quotes from Stoic philosopher Marcus Aurelius and the Buddha. Uh-huh. Again, demonstrating that, you know, just because you can hold your breath for 2.5 seconds and get wet, that just doesn't count for much. The authors at Christian Post, who appear to be duly bamboozled, they say Brand's spiritual transformation occurs amid challenges in his professional life. You know what it is that Russell Brand is, I don't know, he's over 40, he's under 60. He's in that period in your life where you realize that everything you thought was supposed to fulfill you, by the time you're like 45 years old, you're looking around going, none of that is really true. And Russell Brand has discovered that. I mean, the guy's not worried about his next meal. The guy's not worried about funding his retirement. What he realizes is that this carnal life is unfulfilling. And there's an enormous weight of all the sins that you've committed for all those years and the people you've hurt. And that's what Russell's struggling with. It's not whatever his Me Too and all that. That's not what's driving this. What's driving it is what drives all of us eventually to ask, where is God? Who is God? What is God? What is it that I need? Because at a certain point in your life, you realize that you haven't found it. And so hopefully we can get a message over to Russell. I don't have his number. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I can get a hold of him, but I would like to try to preach the gospel to him because he's obviously receptive at the moment. All right, but let's hope he doesn't go into business with Yeezy and that whole thing, for crying out loud. That was the last. By the way, whatever happened to the Christianification of who was the kid? Not the rapper, but was he a rapper? I don't remember. Anyway, the kid from Hollywood who became really famous, and then he became a Christian a little while back, and then I'm not sure whatever happened to him. I mean, and you could say that going all the way back to Bob Dylan. All right, but let's move on because, hey, if any of these people, if I could get a hold of any of these people, at least they would hear the gospel. All right. And so from there, we go on to another touchstone of how it is we got where we are and what's wrong. From the decline and fall file, the Drug Enforcement Administration is set to reclassify marijuana. That's right. They say the shift could have widespread ripple effects across the country. The DEA would recognize the medical use of cannabis, but it would not legalize it, which is exactly the formula George Soros has followed in every state. Now he's got through to the feds. Joe Biden's at the top. He doesn't even need marijuana to be a complete buffoon. But he is, but he's called on governors to erase marijuana convictions and pretend marijuana never existed. And the election year announcement, according to Breitbart, could help Biden among younger voters. So Biden's hoping that the potheads and the illegals and the baby killers can drag him over the finish line in November in the election. Yeah, well, that and the cheating, of course. And, well, based on past performance, it's a pretty shrewd bet. I mean, the MAGA crowd is loud, but the communists are deep and wide. And at this point, the 2024 election, in my estimation, is not so much for who will be the president of the United States, but it will be for who gets to preside over the divvying up of the rotting chunks of the carcass of America and who gets to try to shoo away the vultures. The Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. We go deeper into the this is the dope file. Why do you think they call it dope file? Where Brittany Griner was asked, you remember Brittany Griner? He asked, is extremely attractive.
Don't ask me.
She doesn't remember. Brittany Griner was the, well, here's what Breitbart calls her, a WNBA star. That's a non sequitur. A WNBA star. Nobody heard of Brittany Griner until she got busted in Russia with the dope in her bag.
Oh, that guy.
That guy with the tattoos, right? Yeah. So Brittany Griner was asked, well, how is it that you tried to go through security in Russia with a bunch of dope in your bag?
Obviously.
And her answer was basically, you know, I was stoned. Yeah, she blames a mental lapse for why she forgot to remove the dope from her bag before the Russian authorities inspected the bag. Look, I was wasted, she said. Well, she didn't exactly say that. We're deducing that she was probably stoned. You remember Griner spent almost a year in a Russian prison before she was swapped for an arms dealer named Victor Boat. Don't know what Victor's up to these days. He's not giving interviews. But Brittany Griner is. All right. Okay, so Brittany Griner, obviously being stoned, we know that it can lead to some short-term memory deficits. You could forget you had all that dope in your bag and end up getting thrown in a Russian prison. But even the dope does not explain the mass of hideous tattoos that she had stamped all over her body. Because I'm sorry, drunk or sober, she should have recognized that her tattoo artist was the equivalent of a third grader set loose with his first set of crayons. And at some point, she should have just said, wait a minute, stop that. What are you doing to me? But she didn't. And that's a lesson for all you young people as to the deleterious effects of marijuana to your judgment. Just look at her appendages. That's enough to scare anyone off the dope for life. All right. So from Brittany Griner and Victor Boat, we go to Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, the lisping senator from Tennessee who's unmarried and has been raiding the Treasury for the better part of 30 years. Mm-hmm. So you got to wonder, what's Lindsey Graham up to these days? Well, here's what he's up to. He said he had to turn his phone over to the FBI because it was hacked. Here's what he says. He says he received a text message that he believed was from Chuck Schumer, but it turned out, well, here's what he says. He says, my phone is in the hands of the FBI now. So I get a message. I think it's from Schumer. It ain't from Schumer. And the next thing you know, my phone is, I don't know what. Unquote. Right? Which, that just sounds fishy, okay? Because Lindsey Graham has always sounded, smelled, and looked a little fishy. And so now he comes up with this story about his phone and that the FBI's got is maybe a hack job. I thought this text was from Schumer. Well, a Democratic aide was asked about this. This Democratic aide, longtime Democratic aide, told The Hill that Schumer uses an old flip phone and does not text. So, Lindsay, why would you assume that a text you got from a guy who never texts is actually from him? You expect us to believe that you assumed that a text from a guy who's never texted you in his whole life. All right. Something fishy's going on. Lindsey Graham is lying that he thought he got a text from Chuck Schumer. Why is he lying? I don't know. But that guy, there's something about that guy, I'm telling you. And when it comes out, whether it's now or on Judgment Day, everybody's just going to go, ew, that's creepy. Something about Lindsey Graham just makes my skin crawl. All right. And I'm not buying the text from Chuck Schumer. No, Lindsey, I'm sorry. But whatever the FBI finds on your phone, it didn't have anything to do with Chuck Schumer or anything else. Sorry. They probably have to burn the phone and they have to assassinate everyone who looked at the phone. Because Chuck Schumer. I just transposed Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham. There you go. Chuck Schumer looks like the embodiment of Satan on Earth. Mm-hmm. And Lindsey Graham is his girlfriend. It's just creepy, weird. Something, okay? I don't know what, but something smells. All right, now, from the big die file. Now, here you go. The reason I'm going to lay this out there is because it's not very often that people make predictions that can be judged according to metrics in real time, and we have one here. We have a world-renowned immunology expert. Her name is Professor Dolores Cahill. She has 25 years of expertise in high-throughput protein array, antibody array, proteomics, technology development, and automation. She is a professor at the University of Dublin's College of Medicine, all of which we now know must be taken with a grain of salt. Right? So she's a professor. Oh, big whoop. With her research group and collaborators, she has demonstrated applications of high-throughput array technology and biological diagnostics and medical research. So she's not just a bloviator or a researcher. She has built things that work in the real world around proteomics and high-throughput protein arrays. She holds several international patents, which means she's made things that work, that people will pay for. So she's got that going for her. Anyway, her prediction, she says, since the COVID mRNA shots were rolled out in early 2021, as soon as they were rolled out, Professor Cahill has been sounding the alarm about the devastating impact they will have on public health. Not only does the professor think the shots are dangerous, she warns that in her opinion, they will eventually kill everyone who has received one or more of these shots. So, okay, well, she didn't have to say one or more because you could have left that part out. So there's strike one against her. Cahill issued a warning in the summer of 2021. At which time she was removed from all social media platforms and smeared as a crazy, insane conspiracy theorists because her prediction is everyone who got one of these shots will be dead within 5 years. And so that's a pretty bold prediction. And by the way, we are 22, 23, 20, we're 3 years in. She says within 5 years. I don't know. The only thing I know about the mRNA shots was that we never did anything like that before. They tended to kill all the animals in all the clinical trials up until then. And so it was a really bad idea for everybody to get those shots. That's all. I'm not going to predict anybody's going to die or even get sick. So I don't really know. I just know I wouldn't do it. And I wouldn't advise anybody to do it. And I think it was a hysterically foolish error for the people who made the shot, the people who authorized it, the people who got it, everybody. Just, you made a bad choice there.
But here's the thing, though. I'm convinced lots of those shots were mishandled. That mRNA is so, it had to be kept at a certain temperature and handled just right. And in all the hysterical, sloppy rollout in the parking lot of the baseball stadium. And anyway, that's going to be the saving grace for many people. If this mRNA is as dangerous as Professor Cahill thinks it is. And she has the right to her opinion. She has the right to make a prediction like this. But, I mean, everyone who got the shot dead in 5 years, that would be like billions of people. So, anyway, we'll check back in August of 2026. We'll put a note on the calendar there. And we'll check in with Professor Cahill's prediction. I'll just leave it at that. How about that? And we'll just go smoothly into the You've Been Sold file. That's right. We'll roll smoothly over into the You've Been Sold file where the Daily Mail reports that there is a time bomb looming in the secondhand market for electric vehicles. That's right. An EV may become almost impossible to resell because of the cost associated with replacing the battery. The average EV battery guarantee is 8 years. They lose charge capacity every year. Nobody knows how much, but it's a lot more than Elon Musk pretended. That's for sure. We know that guy was. That guy tend to embellish the positive. But, I mean, you have stuff with rechargeable batteries, right? I have stuff with rechargeable batteries. And after a couple years, they don't charge up for very long anymore. So the cars are the same. The cost of replacing an EV battery could easily be 10 times as high as the value of the vehicle itself on the secondhand market. Yeah, so for all the children who bought the EVs thinking they were so cool, once you try to go sell it again, it's just a used car. No matter how cool you thought it was, it's still just a used car. And used cars aren't worth that much. And so the EV fad will go down as pretty much just an imprudent ego trip indulged by children born into a society where even the relatively dim-witted and lazy could become relatively affluent. Affluent enough to waste 40 grand on something they just thought was cool. And of course, all those people who thought Elon Musk was a genius instead of a salesman, a used car salesman. Well, not a very good used car salesman, but a salesman nonetheless. And so I guess the lesson is, if you have your Tesla, you should plan on driving it until you die, because nobody's going to want it. And there's going to be like 50 undriven Chinese versions that are just sitting there for half the price with brand new batteries, because nobody's wanting them either. So there'll be a big glut of EVs and nobody who wants them, and It's like you're just waking up from a really, really irresponsible weekend, and you're like, what was I thinking about? Man. All right, now, let's go to the justice file, where, let's see here. Oh, so there was a crime in January 1997. Barry Van Treese, the owner of the Best Budget Inn Motel in Oklahoma City, was beaten to death with a baseball bat by Justin Sneed, a 19-year-old drug addict. The drug addict maintained that the motel manager, and his name is Glossop. Do I not have his first name? So he accused the motel manager of hiring him to kill Van Treese. Glossop was convicted in 1998 of murder for hire. He was convicted and sentenced to death. An appeals court reversed his conviction in 2001. He was retried, convicted, and sentenced to death in 2004. His first execution date was 2014, but at that time, Oklahoma had put executions on hold because of problems with the drugs used in lethal injections. We've been reporting on this story for well over a decade. You'll remember this, this pause in executions in Oklahoma was prompted by the flawed execution of Clayton Lockett, April 2014. Lockett awoke while receiving his lethal injection drugs. It took him 43 minutes to die, during which time he is said to have struggled and had a hard time And so this other fellow, Glossop, and I don't have his first name. Do I? I don't have his first name. Glossop denied trying to cover up the murder, and he said he lied to police because he was afraid of being implicated in the crime. So if there's a murder that happens, and you're questioned by the police, if you're worried, why would you be worried about being implicated in it, first of all? Okay, I mean, if you weren't involved, would you be worried about being implicated in it? And would that lead you to lie to the police? He says he took advice from people he shouldn't have when he misled the police in their murder investigation. Listen, so this case is going before the Supreme Court. And Mr. Glossop lied in a murder investigation for which he should be put to death, just for the lying. And, of course, the Supreme Court's not going to find that. None of the court's going to. Nobody knows that that's the case, but that is the case, that if you lie in a murder case, you should be put to death. But, I mean, here we are in America where you've got governors writing rules on how to butcher children in compliance with the law. So it shouldn't come as any surprise that all of the courts, from the Oklahoma Superior Court to the Appeals Court all the way to the Supreme Court, have no idea any longer about right and wrong. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. So we come off the case going to the Supreme Court over the death penalty to just a couple of arrests. A man killed four law enforcement officers and wounded four others in Charlotte, North Carolina last week. So this is a 39-year-old man who has faced 49 different criminal charges since 2001. 49 different charges. He spent time in prison 2011, 2013. Last week, he opened fire on U.S. Marshals trying to serve a warrant on him. And meanwhile, in Nashville, Tennessee, a man who had been charged with 105 offenses since 2007 has been arrested again, this time in the connection with the kidnapping of a female Amazon driver. Around 4 a.m., the 25-year-old female Amazon driver was delivering packages in the mailroom of an apartment building when this creep entered and shut and locked the door behind him. He then allegedly assaulted her, okay? We'll leave it at that. 105 previous offenses. We have a comment from the police chief there in Nashville. He said, you would think somewhere along the way, this perpetrator would have been held accountable. Amen, brother. You would have thought at some point during the previous 105 times that he's been arrested, put on trial, convicted, put on probation, thrown in jail, whatever. 105 offenses. The sheriff says he wishes he would have been held accountable. And the sheriff says, He would have thought that the perpetrator suffered harsher probation and spent more time incarcerated, says the poor sheriff who, I mean, you can't blame the sheriff. I suppose you can. The sheriff should know that if the guy had harsher probation or had spent more time in jail, that still wouldn't have prevented what happened because he's out of jail. Whether he spent an extra 9 months or 9 years in jail doesn't matter. The fact that he was allowed to get out of jail is the problem. Held accountable, I want to tell the police chief there in Nashville. Held accountable means This fellow should have been punished severely at the first offense, severely, enough to scare him into never doing anything like that again. And then, if he was audacious enough to commit a second offense, he should have been put to death. And if you do that, crime disappears almost immediately, almost completely. But there are concerns that, if crime were to disappear, an entire industry would disappear. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans now who make their living off an ever-increasing crime rate. And that's a tragedy. And that's an enormous failure, an enormous civilizational failure. And, you know, just like the buggy whip industry, if the criminal industrial complex disappeared tomorrow and there were no more need for millions of police and judges and probation officers and prison guards, and if that industry just vanished tomorrow, all those people would be able to, just like the buggy whip makers, they would all be able to find gainful employment somewhere. Well, most of them. So that's an industry that needs to disappear, and we could all adapt, and then we wouldn't have to suffer under the shame of such a massive civilizational failure that leads to a poor woman. This is unbelievable. This should shock the country that this could have happened to this woman and that this creep had 105 previous offenses. It should shock the world. But there's too many crimes to even keep track of. You can't afford to be shocked over that, for crying out loud. There's something more horrible happening right now that we'll hear about in the news tomorrow. All right, so from there we go to the back into the After the Rapture file, oddly enough, where Breitbart reports that O.J. Simpson's credit card sold for more than $10,000 at an auction last week. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, listen to this. The fellow who bought it says he bought O.J. Simpson's credit card on eBay last year for $70. At which point, whoever is interviewing him should say, "Man, you're a creep. What's your problem?" He says he bought it to give it to his father, but that when OJ passed away, he thought he might just earn a little profit from auctioning the card off. At which point, "Well, what about the gift to your father? I thought you bought it for your father. Now you decide to auction it off. Did I say earlier you're a creep? You're a real creep." But don't lose all faith in human character, because the owner of the card, who bought it for his dad but then decided to auction it off and make a profit instead, he says that he's not keeping all the cash. He intends to donate 10% to the National Network to End Domestic Violence. That's right. So did we say you were a creep? Okay. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me when Bob Enyart bought OJ's memorabilia in February of 1999 and burned it on the steps of the LA County Courthouse, the same courthouse where OJ got away with murder. OJ, in an interview, suggested that Bob should have donated all that money to the National Network to End Domestic Violence. Anyway, did I say you were a creep? Anyway, the irony was not lost on us back then when OJ suggested that Bob should have donated that money to...
What money?
Oh, the $35,000 that Bob spent buying his memorabilia. OJ said that money would have been better spent preventing domestic violence.
Oh, no,
you know what prevented domestic violence was locking OJ up. All right. So anyway, that's After the Rapture. There'll be guys like OJ Simpson and this guy, Jonathan Lepore, who bought his credit card. These will be the type of people who are left on the planet. Trust me, you don't want to be here for that. It's not going to be pleasant. So nobody's going to enjoy that, okay? It's going to be rough. All right. Meanwhile, we have a headline from Breitbart, and this headline, by the way, was not just on Breitbart. This circulated through all the major news media complexes, platforms. IRS plans to increase audit rates of wealthy taxpayers. Did you get that? Wealthy taxpayers. That's right. Taxpayers earning more than $10 million. The IRS says that all this money that's been approved in the budget to expand the IRS, that's all going to be spent working against taxpayers that earn at least $10 million. The IRS plans also to triple the audit rates of large corporations with assets over $250 million and increase the audit rates of business partnerships with assets over $10 million. And for those rich people, the IRS plans to increase their audit rates by tenfold. So if you're out there and you're struggling to get by working paycheck to paycheck, you can get some satisfaction in knowing that the people who make $10 million are going to be audited at a rate tenfold higher. So hopefully that makes you sleep better at night and you feel better about yourself. The IRS commissioner says the agency will leave Americans earning less than $400,000 annually alone. That's right. Here's what he said. Quote, "There is no new wave of audits coming for middle and low-income taxpayers, coming for mom and pops. That is not in our plans in any way, shape, or form," unquote, said the IRS. Oh, no. What is he, the commissioner? So did you notice all the extra words he put in there? He said there's no new wave of audits. Now, he could have just said there are no new audits, but he didn't say that. He said there's no new wave of audits. Why? Because nobody can define a new wave. And then he says there's going to be no increase on audits on low-income taxpayers. No kidding. They don't pay any tax. How are you going to audit them? Figure out how to give them more of my money? Anyways, no, not going to audit the mom and pops. He said that's not in our plans in any way. One extra word. Shape, two, or form. Three extra words. Why all the extra words? Well, there's only two conclusions, two logical conclusions that an intelligent person could come to. Number one, he's just lying outright. Just to get the headline, calm everyone down before they start turning the screws on everybody making any money at all. So he could just be lying outright. Or, more likely, he's leaving himself room to change his mind when it comes out that they started auditing mostly middle-class people who can't afford to hire lawyers like the $250 million corporation can. And then they're going to say, well, you know what we meant by assets? So what we meant by earning more than $10 million is this is a 10-year thing. So it's anyone earning over $1 million, and that's gross receipts, which, okay, there are a few mom-and-pops, like every mom-and-pop, every small business in America. Because it was a 10-year budget plan. Oh, that wasn't clear? Well, I said there's no new wave. And it wasn't in it. There's no way, shape, or form of any of that. Did you read my statement on that? All right, but they got their headline. And it's circulated through the conservative media with some significant doubt. So most of the conservative websites who publish this propaganda also published some level of suspicion that maybe this isn't quite exactly true. And so, we've done our part to contribute to that healthy level of doubt and skepticism. All right. And so with that, we are coming to the end. We're running out of time here rapidly, as always happens. And so before I go, I think I'll plug Gosselin's book, Paul Gosselin's book, one more time. I'll put up a link. Flight from the Absolute, Cynical Observations on the Postmodern West. Start with Volume 1, but I liked Volume 2 better. But check them out. And then finally, from the Politics File, do you remember the Houthis? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. The Houthis? You remember them, right? Those were the Muslim terrorists who disrupted shipping through the Suez Canal and added one more element of economic chaos to the world by shooting rockets at commercial ships in the Red Sea. So you have to remember them because you don't hear about them anymore. And what happened was, you remember back in January and February, there were all these headlines. First, it was the Houthis shooting rockets at everything that moved. And then there was the military response of NATO and all the great Western powers against the Houthis, and they blew up some Houthi stuff there. And what mostly got blown up was any headlines about the Houthis. Because the Houthis do remain active. They've conducted multiple strikes in recent weeks. The most recent against a UK-flagged ship. But there's no more headlines. Nobody's reporting on it anymore, even though the vast majority of commercial shipping is opting to take the long way around the Cape of Good Hope. And if you were matriculated in the government schools, that means instead of going across the middle of the Middle East, they have to go all the way down around Africa. It takes a lot longer. So, and that's what most ships are doing now because of the terrorism that's been unleashed in the Red Sea. But the press has implemented a voluntary embargo on any news that might embarrass their employers over there in the government media complex, the priests up there in the temples of Syrinx there who run the media, and the government, and the military, and the elections, and all of that. So it's funny how that works, that the it's rare that a military operation can achieve such complete and utter dominance in the press. But oddly enough, that's exactly what's happened. And we probably won't hear about the Houthis until they blow up something so significant that we all end up having to pay attention to it. And of course, we hope that doesn't happen. And we also, we want to go on record as hoping that the prediction of the professor of everyone dying, we hope that doesn't happen either, because that would just be unpleasant. And so there, we end on a positive note. We don't want the Houthis blowing anything significant up, and we don't want everyone who got the shot to die. That would be a drag. All right, so that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends over at Real Science Radio. And, of course, you for listening. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.